Obituary.
Alexei Navalny. Better Russia. Where are you? Alexei Navalny, leader of Russia's opposition, was killed in jail by the regime on February 16th, aged 47.
He was just an ordinary fellow, nothing remarkable about him. He was every man, every Russian, one of the hundreds of thousands whose voices were usually stifled. His speeches weren't full of literary quotes or references to history. Instead, he liked to sit down with people and talk about what worried them. Healthcare, schools, the price of bread. He was no philosopher, just a jobbing lawyer, turned obsessive blogger, turned leading opponent of Vladimir Putin and his regime of crooks and thieves. He resisted everything they stood for. Cronyism, greed, moral rot. For that, he knew he would be endlessly harassed, imprisoned and silenced, killed possibly. But Alexei Navalny was not afraid of death. He often talked as if he had died already and got over it. He almost had. In August 2020, on a campaign flight in Siberia, his clothes were smeared with Novichok, a nerve agent developed for the Russian army. The regional hospital was unsafe for him, so he was flown to Berlin. When, after 5 months, he recovered and flew home, he was immediately arrested and sent to jail on ludicrous charges. But he got his revenge on Vladimir the Poisoner of Underpants. 2 days after his arrest, his team released a 2-hour film of Putin's secret palace on the Black Sea, with its helipads, gold loo brushes, and pole-dancing stage. No need for a speech about it. The film said it all. The palace had been filmed by a drone launched from an inflatable boat, like something in a thriller movie. Hollywood's dramas regularly seemed to reflect his own. Everything he knew about politics, for example, came from watching The Wire and The West Wing. His own career was one big reality show in which fighting the authorities was fun. And it was science fiction, his great love, with unpredictable thugs in a weird, menacing universe. In detention sometimes, he fancied himself in the cabin of a spaceship voyaging to some new world. His android guards might try to obstruct him, or asteroids might blast the ship entirely, but he could still jump nimbly through. Through to where? To a future Russia free, democratic, unthreatening, capitalist without the crap, and yes, happy. He had supported Boris Yeltsin's mass privatizations, but his brief dream of liberalism when the Soviet regime fell was soon hijacked by gangsters. Persuading ordinary Russians to want it again, to realize that they had never actually known it, was hard. He persevered because he was proud of Russia and what he believed it could be. Normal, like other European countries, not run by kleptocrats, yet different and special for its culture, its history, and its weight in the world. That balance needed fighting for. He had not always been such a fighter. The failings and malevolence of the Soviet system had dawned on him only slowly. As a child, he queued endlessly for milk and dreamed of chewing gum. Summers were spent with his grandparents near Chernobyl. After the nuclear accident, local people were ordered to dig up potatoes from the radioactive dust to prove all was well. Some of his relatives died. Later, he liked a punk band called Civil Defense. Their rebellious lead singer was sent by the KGB to a psychiatric clinic. Still, he held back until, in 2000, Putin became president. The cynicism and contempt he saw in this man pushed him into politics. Yabloko, the oldest liberal party, seemed a natural fit until he found he was too nationalist for it. At one time, he even made xenophobic videos he later regretted. But he also began to work at the regional grassroots, mobilizing voiceless citizens, chipping at corruption and injustice in 100 little ways. He bought shares in some of Russia's largest state-run companies, then went to their AGMs and grilled the thieving management. Through a clutch of anti-corruption websites, he encouraged people to demand road repairs, Russian pothole, monitor public procurement, Russian kickbacks, and report election violations. He set up 40 offices across the country's 11 time zones, uniting them by blogging. Navalny Live streamed his doings on YouTube. On social media, he sent out calls to people of all persuasions, Martians even, to come out and protest. From the rigged election of 2011 onwards, in ever bigger numbers, they did. The regime mocked him as an internet hamster, so he was. He ran for mayor of Moscow in 2013, picking up 27% of the vote, despite facing trumped-up embezzlement charges. In 2017, the Kremlin barred him from running for the presidency, but through his YouTube presence, he controlled the political narrative. The internet hamster would bite the throats of those bastards. After his homecoming arrest in 2021, there was a swift, rigged trial in a police station. He was found guilty, of course, but allowed to address the court. He relived the climax of one of Russia's most popular films, Brat 2 or Brother 2, when the charismatic hero shouted at a racketeer, "Tell me, where does power lie? I believe that power lies in truth." Those words rang out now as if he was addressing a fired-up multitude. In his mind, he was. Fear was something he had no time for. When Ukraine was invaded in 2022, he urged Russians from his cell to empower themselves and call out this imperialist act based on lies. Ukrainians were Slav brothers. He himself was the son of a Ukrainian father and a Russian mother. They should be left alone. Crimea's annexation in 2014 had also shown Russia moving sharply backwards from any semblance of a European nation-state. But there he wanted Crimea's people to decide freely which side they were on. Putin's goons invented more cases against him, tacking on another 19 years to his sentence for extremism. They sent him to a modern-day gulag, then a worse one, above the Arctic Circle. But even the solitary cells of such frigid prisons could not silence him. He made light of them and urged Russians to vote against Putin in the coming elections. His decision to return had always been right, no question. He would not give up on his ideas or his country, and his supporters should not give up either. "The Putinist state cannot last," he wrote in January. "One day we'll look over and he will be gone."